from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour, we've all had moments where we can't find the right thing to talk about, whether it's on a first date or stuck in the elevator with our boss's boss. Chris Cullen and Rob Battaker's book, What to Talk About, offers communication tips for nearly any tricky situation. The authors join us to share their secrets for navigating awkward moments and avoiding dead air. That's next, right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Chris Cullen and Rob Battaker join us this Forum Hour, authors of a book called What to Talk About. They tell us, often with tongues planted in cheek, how to talk more fluently, intelligently, and charmingly to all kinds of people, including family, friends, lovers, future lovers, postal carriers, people under the age of 8, is how it says on the back of the book. Chris Cullen's work has appeared in Wired, The New York Times, and McSweeney's Quarterly. He lives in San Francisco. Rob Battaker is a writer, performer, and co-founder of the Casper Hauser Comedy Group, and he lives in Oakland, and both join us for this morning's opening hour. It's not the opening hour. It's the second hour. All right. But I was thinking about opening conversations because we'll get into that in the course of this hour. And in fact, you can let us know what you think are good icebreakers. That's the question we put out on our social media this morning. I had said I thought somebody once called me the king of conversation. But these guys in the SF Gate says these are the kings of conversation. So I've been usurped. Where do we begin this conversation? I suppose a good way to begin is why this book? You've kind of characterized yourselves as faux conversational experts. So if you're not experts, why'd you want to write this book?
We needed to become experts. It was sort of a physician heal thyself situation. We needed to become a little better in those moments when panic sets in and you really don't know what to say to the person in the elevator. That's sort of the obvious situation where you need better conversation. But we also wrote it because we feel like we're pretty confident at conversation most of the time, and I think a lot of people feel that way too, but there's still moments when you wish you could take it to another level.
We think it's about 11% of the time that people want to go further, connect, dig deeper, and this is an opportunity to do that.
Well, let's talk first about the opportunity of actually making conversation. I mean, it's different in so many different ways. If you're talking to a Muni driver, I find, you know, maybe the best thing if you have curiosity is ask him, how do you do this and what's his job like and all that sort of thing. But with a stranger or somebody you're, heaven forfend, I should use this language, coming on to or flirting with, you know, each situation is different, isn't it?
Right. But yeah. I think there's certain rules that apply across the board, whether it's a Muni situation, a dating situation, even a close friend. I think we all want to get some really interesting, maybe even profound information out of a conversation. But sort of counterintuitively, going with specifics is much better than asking big abstract questions.
But you hit on something key, Michael, which is, you know, everybody's got a ton of stories, a Muni driver, a doctor, a plumber. They're all around us, and they're dormant most of the time.
Yeah, you say in your book, get them to tell stories. I think that's really good advice and also can be a real good catalyst just in terms of, I mean, I use my curiosity every day, and that's, I say it's like going to being a bat in a cave. Publishers say, write a book on conversation. I wouldn't know where to begin because where I begin usually is trying to establish some rapport and just following my curiosity.
There's chapter one for you. For your book on conversation.
Well, yeah, but there is some, you know, Chris was talking about general rules. There's Cullen. There's a sense like when you're talking about small talk in the book, when you're writing about small talk, you say don't necessarily repeat what the person says. But when you're interviewing for a job, that's a time to actually repeat what the person says. So there is a divergence there, right?
Yeah, that's a great distinction. When you're interviewing for a job, they want to see you can speak their language. When you're engaging in small talk, you can get stuck in what we call mirroring. So nice day, how you doing, fine. They're dead ends. And we recommend opening that up, sending out some conversational tendrils. And usually that's the form of a story. So how is your morning is a much different question than how you doing.
Chris?
Yeah, and what did you do this morning? Anchor it to specifics. Tell me how your what your breakfast routine is. Now, that sounds banal, and it is, but interesting sort of emotional details tend to seep out when you ask very concrete questions like that.
Talking to the authors of What to Talk About on a plane, at a cocktail party, in a tiny elevator with your boss's boss, with illustrations by, is this guy's name really Tony Millionaire? Is it really? Is that a real
that's
name? Baptized name?
That's what he says, yeah.
Reminds me of that Texas Hold'em guy, you know, Chris Moneymaker. I've always wondered, is that his real name?
Yeah, it determines your fate sometimes.
Well, that's an easy opening conversation. I think, Chris, it was you who went in a Safeway and gave somebody $50. That's an easy way to open conversation.
Yeah, it's not really sustainable to do it often, but it's nice.
Unless you're Tony Millionaire.
But certainly, yeah, Tony Millionaire. Let's talk about some of these encyclopedia of topics that you give as icebreakers, because we're going to get some icebreakers or some opening lines from listeners. Talk about Berlusconi. Talk about Eritrea. Chuck Waller lizards? I mean, are you guys kidding? I wanted to talk once. I saw in Beverly Hills Morgan Fairchild, and I thought, how do you approach a movie star like that? If I'd only thought of Chuck Waller lizards at that moment, that would have served me.
That would have been perfect, and who knows where you would be now, Michael. These are topics. This is actually real information that we've compiled. One of my favorites is a woman named P. Orridge, who, along with her partner, underwent cosmetic surgery to make themselves look identical. They called it pandrogyny. That's a good place to start. I don't know about with Morgan Fairchild. But.
Well, you say, though, find a context, because, you know, you're sitting at a dinner party and somebody says, pass the water, and then you can bring up the lizard. You guys have a thing about reptiles, don't you?
We do. We're reptilophiles.
I mean, there's that dressing up like a dinosaur for a party and all that sort of thing. But it sort of behooves people, if they want to get into a good dinner conversation, to come prepared. That's really just obvious and good logical advice, right? I mean,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with coming with some ideas in your head, just like you would come with a bottle of wine. I think people are sort of allergic to the idea that maybe you have canned material. But there's nothing wrong with just having something that you want to talk about, because our heads do sort of empty out sometimes in these social situations. So if you have something to draw on, you know, it can get things going.
Well, let's get things going with some of the small talk here. I mean, they talk about the weather. That's obvious small talk. It can be pretty trite, though, you know. And it doesn't necessarily lead to that deeper level that you're talking about. Or traffic. I mean, these are things that people do like to talk about.
Yeah, classic small talk topics. Our hope is that we can push them to big talk. So it's okay to start with small talk, the weather, the traffic, but push it further. So with the weather, move beyond that mirroring phase, nice weather, yeah, it's a beautiful day, into, again, questions that ask for stories. What's the coldest you've ever been, we found, is a good one. Everybody's got a story about extreme weather conditions.
Well, when you break the mirroring, you talk about, we're talking about gay sex in the last hour, and you got James saying it's a beautiful day, and John saying they say the weather was just like this when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, if that actually happened. And now, raising the whole question about Pearl Harbor and the historicity of it, but then you say, yeah, they went on to have a drink and had deluxe sexual intercourse. So,
extreme situation. But this actually did happen to James and John, friends of ours. So it's you've got to read your audience, and obviously certain contexts will call for milder on-ramps.
Yeah. Is Raynette a real character? You kill her. I mean, this is really a terrible thing.
Everyone is real in this book. This is science. So, yes, please take it very seriously, and we're being literal.
But the skydiving accident and all that actually occurred?
At a certain level. You could say that.
She was not killed as a result of that.
No, she was not. We invented that part of the story. We were teaching a lesson.
You're fiction writers, too, and you got that in your pocket as well. We're talking to the authors of What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator, with Your Boss's Boss, and even Children Under 8. Maybe one of you might want to read something. Like, what do you talk about with Children Under 8? There's page 81 actually gives you some clues on that.
Well, Rob, you can read some of that. I'll just tell you, first of all, you want to make sure the parents are watching so you get credit, because if they're not seeing you do it, you just get no credit and it's pointless.
Or so that you don't take it for a pedophile. Did you read about – no, I'm serious. Actually, there was a terrible thing that happened up in Washington. There was a major news story just yesterday, I believe, in some small city in Washington. They did an abduction of a child in a park, and they did it as a video to try to get people aware of child abduction. A guy came with a mask, but they didn't warn the people in the park, which is one of the stupidest things most appalling things I could have ever imagined.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah. But let's talk about opening conversations with kids.
Yeah, kids can be great and they can be tough audience as well. So we'll read a few of our recommendations, especially for shy kids, for little shy guys and gals. Even super shy little nieces or nephews can usually tell you their age. It's a good warm-up exchange. And of course, you'll feign astonishment when they blurt out 5. The flip side, they get asked this 50 times a day, followed by what grade they're in. If you'd like to connect more meaningfully, try moving into new territory. Ask for their opinion with a simple would you rather game, making the choices connect to their lives. Would you rather be an astronaut or a zookeeper? Would you rather have toes made of jelly beans or chocolate eyelashes? Take the opinion game to the next level by treating them like a real peer. Ask a multiple choice conundrum that you need their help with, letting them venture an opinion about you rather than having them explain themselves. For example, I was thinking of getting a new purse. Do you think it should be green or orange? Continue in this vein until mom lets them use her iPad.
That's good stuff. Also, I'll tell you what else is good stuff with these cold openings. You look like you just thought of something interesting. I mean, it's a good opening. Or you look like your mind just went blank. On the other hand, I found myself thinking, what kind of mind do these guys have? The page before, I bet that 100 years from now, torture chambers will seem almost barbaric. I mean, that's pretty off-the-wall stuff. Also esoteric. Do you think train conductors get burned out on waving to people? This is where their shtick comes in, but it gets attention. Those kinds of things do get attention.
Well, it also gets you away from saying, how's it going? What do you do? The kinds of things that we normally talk about when we're at a party or, we just meet someone. And, you know, it's just such a rut. And I think, why do we go to these social situations? It's because we want to get blasted out of our ruts. So it's up to us to sort of push things up to the next level.
People say, how's it going? Or how you doing? Sometimes I want to say, do you really care? Is there sincerity behind that question? But of course, that would just be rude of me. We're talking to the co-authors of a book that's out called What to Talk About. And finding out what you may have as a practical problem in terms of a situation you might have been in where you found, what should I talk about? Or you may want some advice. There's a lot of it in this book, a lot of practical and actually pretty good advice on breaking through. And maybe some of you may want to call in and give us some icebreakers that you have used or found helpful, particularly maybe in flirting situations. One good thing I've always told my students, remember, is don't come off self-promoting. I own a Bentley or a home in Tahoe. And also a good thing to remind yourself about is not to always ask people, what do you do? Because that's kind of a rude question. In fact, it may be a politically incorrect question, but people do it all the time. Yeah.
We have a better question. First of all, when someone asks you something you don't want to answer, how are you, what do you do, just skip it, ignore it. Answer the question you wish they had asked. We prefer questions like, what kind of car did your dad drive when you were a kid? No. Carrie Tennis, the writer, taught me that when I was starting out as a journalist. And it's an easy question. It's safe. And yet it sort of it gets at emotional truths out there. You can start talking about your childhood. You can talk about your dad. It's evocative. So just skip the boring questions and go straight to the ones that lead somewhere interesting.
How about what'd you have for breakfast? That's a standard, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know,
we ask people that before we put them on the air.
Yeah, it gets, you know, sometimes you need to establish some basic comfort, and you can start with something like that.
Can you talk about bonking? Now, that's not Mary Roach's version of bonking, which I'm sure you may be familiar with.
Yeah.
Our version of bonking is akin to the cyclists or marathon runners where you fizzle in the middle of the conversation. And what we recommend is, again, having something in your back pocket. We like to call them conversation piñatas, things you can both take a metaphorical swing at and put your heads together and try to figure it out. If you admit that you don't know everything, if you admit your own ignorance, there are a ton of possibilities that open up. So, for example, what is thunder, really? Let's try to figure that out as lay people. Or, you know, would you rather go gluten-free or caffeine-free for the rest of your life if you had to choose? Dilemmas, big topics that we think we should know about but we don't, can jumpstart and get us out of that bonk.
But then you can also find out how ignorant some people are. You begin with a world, a global topic. You know, it's like Jay Leno going around asking questions of people about things in the news that they have absolutely no enlightenment about.
We're big fans of ignorance. We think that confessing ignorance is a great way to connect with people because we're all fairly ignorant if we're honest about it. Certainly ignorant about some things, and it can, if you establish that sort of mutual ignorance, you're that much closer, and you can sort of break through to another level.
Mutual ignorance. Let me actually invite those of you listening to join this conversation, and in fact, you may have Well, some icebreakers or some problems. I'm going to throw out both of those for your response. That is, if you have a good opening line or you've used a good opening line, sometimes just a joke is really good, or just being funny or complimentary, or you may want to simply comment on what you've used that's had some practical use. Or if you're looking for a solution to a problem and a way to open a conversation, whatever that may be, let's have Chris and Rob have a shot at that. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone call, so feel free to join us now. It's 866-733-6786. And, of course, you can join the conversation in a number of other ways, emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any question or comment you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. So admitting ignorance is one way of putting people at ease, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I think we get stuck a lot when we're worried about looking good or looking smart or having the right thing to say. And letting go of that ego, I guess, is a great conversational gift.
Yeah, you have talk about the Korean War or diesel power or what is your other example here? How wind works.
Yeah, or look at the headlines today. I mean, imagine being at a party. Would you rather hear someone talk about everything they know about what's going on in the Ukraine, or would you rather hear someone talk about all they don't know? I think that would be that much more interesting and eye-opening.
Well, for our listeners, I hope it's the former rather than the latter, although sometimes we are perhaps somewhat ignorant, quasi-ignorant, depends. What about this inner panic you write about? I mean, this is very common, isn't it? People, when they have to have a conversation or they think they're going to be in a situation where they have to converse brilliantly or charmingly or whatever, they get an inner panic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said it earlier. Curiosity is really at the root of good conversation. But I think this panic comes over us and we forget our basic curiosity. And, you know, we're just trying to keep the balloon in the air, keep away from that dreaded silence that might fall between us and whoever we're talking to. And so we blather on, or the other person blathers on. If you can just quell that panic, we found that you can sort of tap into that curiosity and just ask basic questions about your fellow human.
So much of it is mindset, too. If you step into that situation worried about what you're going to say versus what you might learn, your mindset can affect your...
That's a very important point. I mean, the point of being a good listener and starting a conversation. And people always ask me, oh, talk show. Yeah, you've got to talk, but you also have to listen. I'm also wondering perhaps if we can talk about what's polite as opposed to what's impolite. When I'm in a foreign country, people will often say to me, where are you from? You know, especially if I'm talking in another language, because there's an accent. When I hear somebody with an accent, I'm often inclined to ask them, out of curiosity, where are you from? And play a little Henry Higgins and see if I can guess it. But there are those who say that's impolite.
We don't worry about that too much. We think impolite is far more interesting and human, which is ultimately what you're going for. So I think if your intention is good, 9 times out of 10, that's what the person will respond to. And even if you're sort of out in left field with your question, it's okay. They'll appreciate the candor.
You know what else they appreciate? When you compliment, especially women. I don't know that I should be gender, but I've noticed in many cases, I actually am one of those kind of guys who actually looks at women's shoes, for example, and admires original kind of taste in shoes and so forth, and will compliment.
Women That's always, a really good point, Michael.
Women are always very pleased to have their shoes complimented. I don't compliment them all, by the way.
I haven't met many people who don't like a compliment. I try to compliment Rob every day. And one thing we found that works is to end a compliment with a question. Instead of just leaving them hanging there with this compliment about themselves, when they have to sort of sputter reply, Rob, I love your eyes. Did you have them done?
Thank you, Chris. That was also a great question.
Little bit of a conversation stopper, which brings up the whole question about advice about stopping conversations. I mean, because sometimes they're going nowhere, they're boring, or they're almost enervating. What do you say?
Well, sometimes they're going nowhere and you want to end them, but also sometimes they're wonderful, but you're just done. You want to talk to the next person at the party. We say that in both cases, the answer is the same. It's been so nice talking to you.
Yeah, it's the Sandy Koufax approach. You know, go out while you're on top, and it's got to end at some point. So make it a high point.
Yeah. And then turn and walk away. Are you going to offend them? Maybe, but that's okay.
Let's go to our callers. We'll begin, Simone, with you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air. Speak to us.
Hi. So my question.
Do I need to start a conversation with you, Simone? No.
I had a question about what would be a good conversation starter when you're on a blind date.
Great.
And the guy just isn't really, you know, cooperating.
Well, Rob Bedecker was nodding as soon as you said that with some sense of recognition, Rob.
Yeah, again, I don't want to gender stereotype, but if you're with a guy or a woman who's not cooperating, the curiosity rule applies. But give them some feedback. You know, do it. Now's a better time to do it than 10 years into the marriage. You know, if they're not listening or being curious, gently prod them to suggest they might want to know something about you. It's a good litmus test.
And thank you for the call, Simone. Let me go to another one. From Oakland, we welcome Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know how to talk to the in-laws that don't really like you. I missed a major event, and after I missed this major event, things kind of went downhill. I mean, it didn't go downhill. I really love my son-in-law, but the in-laws don't really like me, but they don't say anything. They just do all these little behind-the-scenes little things.
What do you think about the elephant in the room? What do you think about being direct and saying, why don't you like me? Or do we have a problem here or something like that? That's kind of opens up cans of worms, but it may open up a conversation.
But it might be necessary. If there's an elephant in the room, conversation can't get past it unless it's identified often.
But I also think, Nancy, sometimes when you are finding yourself trying to win someone back, that's an uphill battle. Sometimes you just have to sort of cut the line and just be yourself and hope that they come around over time.
Yeah, or ask them, you know, what is wind? Take the focus off your relationship. Put it on an external subject.
Or say, I'm opening a conversation with you. What do you think is the definition of a really good, friendly in-law?
Yeah. Well, Nancy, I'm glad you bring up the family thing, because a lot of what we hear is, look, I'm okay talking to strangers in an elevator, but, you know, these family members of mine at the Thanksgiving table, that is what's really painful for me. What do you recommend about that? One trick we have is to stop thinking of them as family members. In fact, stop thinking of them as real people at all. If you sort of astrally project yourself up onto the ceiling and look down on these relatives of yours and imagine that they're fictional creations, you can get a little psychic distance from them and appreciate them for the freaks that they are.
And then, see, you can quote Chris Cullen on that.
Well, they're actually really nice people, but I missed a major event, so they don't really like me. I mean, they don't say it, but it's obvious, so.
Yeah. Well, an apology might be in order, or identifying that elephant in the room. And sincerity goes a long way. And you sound like a sincere, genuine person.
And so you just got a compliment from Rob Bedecker. Good luck to you, Nancy, and thank you for the call. We'll take more of your calls when we return. I just want to read some of the conversation starters that are coming from you, our listeners, and you can post these on our Facebook page. Jeff says, on the East Coast, what do you do for work? On the West Coast, what do you like to do for fun? Rosalinda writes, ask them a question about themselves. Do you like, have you been here before? I'd love to hear more about your, another listener says, what do you like to think about? We'll get you weird looks, but it will often get you interesting answers. And a listener tweets, you got to know how to tell the same story different ways so your significant other does not say you always tell that story. Okay, we'll get some more listener responses from you. A joke arsenal is good, by the way. As I said, conversation openers, I'm speaking as a joke aficionado here. If you can do it in context, and a lot of these things have to do with context, just like that lizard we spoke of earlier. I'm not talking about Geico lizard. What's the name of that lizard again in your book?
The Chuckwalla lizard can live without water. That's why we found it interesting.
Well, lots of interesting things. Make yourself an encyclopedia of interesting things, as these two gentlemen are suggesting. And also, avail yourself of participating in this program. Our toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. Number of other ways to join us, tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Book is What to Talk About. Chris Cullen, Rob Bedecker, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On today's talk show, we're talking about how you talk and ways to engage people in conversation. And we have the co-authors of a book called What to Talk About, Conversation Tips for Any Situation. Rob Bedecker and Chris Cullen here with us in studio. I'm reading a few emails here. Paul writes, I paraphrase, but she stated that there is a hierarchy of conversation from lowest to highest. I'm not sure who she is, but he says, lowest to highest. People who talk about themselves, people who talk about other people who talk about events, people who talk about concepts and ideas. No one can be exclusively in one of these categories. We're all a blend. I prefer conversations about events and ideas, and there are times when I draw on personal experience or what I observe in others that are germane to a larger discussion. Tony writes, ask about kids. Having no kids of my own, I was unaware that parents are so obsessed with their children. And Kiyoshi writes, major league hitter may be skilled in the art of fouling off pitches to remain at bat, but even they look silly chasing unexpected pitches when they attempt to adjust their swing to the pitch, resulting in a weak bloop, grounder, or miss. It's often wiser to just take the pitch and look for a pitch that they can really drive. Timing is everything. Remaining silent is preferable for career and social respect than sounding foolish. It's the age-old axiom, better to remain silent and be thought of as a fool than to speak out and remove all doubt. And Bill emails, I usually have no problem starting a conversation, but ending one with someone who has logorrhea is extremely difficult. Whether strangers on a plane or friends with too much time on their hands, I'd love a tip or two on how to end the talking without hurting their feelings. Gentlemen.
The plane is tricky. We do, in general, recommend ending a conversation by thanking the person and turning around and walking away. It's hard to walk away on a plane. You know, that's one reason why this book can be very handy. You can open it up and actually start reading. It doubles as an actual book.
Yeah. Or you can sit on a plane and hold the book, and this can be a conversation starter, right?
Exactly.
Do you know this book? Do you know this? Actually, let's open your book. In fact, Rob, would you be so kind as to maybe give us a little bit of dinner party?
Sure. Yeah. This is Dinner Party Games. Congratulations. Someone invited you over for a meal, either mistakenly or on purpose. But don't celebrate just yet. Careers, marriages, and even science can hinge on what's said between or during bites. Don't just arrive hungry for success. If you want to move past the same old boring biographical stuff, try these activities.
There's another word than stuff. Thank you for catching that.
Which will guide your conversation into the fecund realm of imaginative exploration. These gambits and contests can be played by the whole party or on the side by two or three conspirators. And the first one is called Movie Pitch. Improvise a movie pitch, starting with a made-up title. To generate a title, open up a book to a random page and read the first two words on that page. That's your title. You can generate the main character by asking one person for their uncle's name and another person for their pet's name, and then combining, such as Steven Red Rocket. I'll give you a couple other tips. For example, questions to ask the grocery checker. These are what we call drive-by conversations, people we interact with every day, but we seldom engage in conversation. So with the grocery checker, what's the angriest or happiest you've ever seen anyone while paying for their groceries? What's the ratio of people who make eye contact versus those who won't look at you? And what's the most coveted job in the store besides checker? Wealth of information in the people we pass day to day.
And feel free to join us in conversation. Actually, we'll get Jan on here from Petaluma, who I think has a comment that's right in sync with some of my own sentiments. Jan, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thank you so much. I was accompanying my husband at a children's workshop in Big Sur, children's book writing workshop, and I was very, very unhappy. I was living in L.A., and I was very miserable, and one of the other facilitators there, another gentleman said, hey, how are you, you know? And I said, you know, are you asking because you really want to know or just asking? Because I was so vulnerable. And he said, no. He said, no, sit down. And I sat down. And he said, what's going on? And I said, I'm just miserable. I hate L.A. And I'm in my 50s, right? And he said, why don't you move to Petaluma? That's where we live. And give it a try. And we sold our condo after living my whole life there, and we moved to Petaluma. And he and his wife have become our closest friends, and they've introduced us to all of their friends, and we have a new life. And I've never been happier in my whole life.
That is such an unusual story, a rare and extraordinary story.
I love that story too, Jan, because honesty is what opened things up. It's a great.
I often want to say when people say, "How are you?" You know, do you really care? Do you really want to know? Because in most instances, it's just a kind of pro forma. Actually, Orwell had a good way of describing those prefabricated hen houses that come out of the mouth, you know, and they're all cliches for the most part.
Which is fine sometimes, too, but these little cracks can change lives, as Jan attests.
Yeah, I got to Petaluma because of that. Yeah, thank you, Jan, for that call. Let me get another caller on. Jonathan, good morning.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I wanted to say I'm a big fan of Casper Hauser. I love your Sky Mall. I bought Earn Your MBA on the Toilet for several people. And I'm really looking forward to your new book.
Thank you.
I haven't read it yet. My question for you, though, is Is it
and he has beautiful eyes, yeah. as you heard from his partner, yeah.
Is it possible to have a conversation with someone without looking at them? You know, maybe they may have unfortunate facial hair or overly hip glasses, and you would just prefer not to look at them, but can I still have a normal conversation with them?
We're doing it right now.
It's a great question, and I think there are also a lot of offers in that situation, interesting physical features or things going on in the moment. This is another great generator. If they've got a lip ring, there's a story behind that. So use that to your advantage.
And thank you for the call. When you find something in common, like you're in Casper Hauser and Chris has a son named Casper. I mean, when you find something in common, it's often good ground to work on in conversation, isn't it? I mean, other than, you know, are you a Virgo like I am or something?
I'm
like
a Virgo too. That's true. I didn't know that. So well, we're off and running, right? Absolutely. Common ground is where bonds form, and this is great ground for conversation.
And we'll bring in more of our callers. We go to Larry. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. I have a question. I work in a fairly high-pressure job where conversations are very task-oriented, very focused. And the question is when it's lunch break and to go from that kind of situation to the casual conversation, I find very awkward. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Larry. A lot of what we talk about is sort of pivoting from one mode to another. And if you're in a really intense work situation and then you need to move into casual, that can be tricky.
Yeah.
You know, one thing we recommend is instead of showing up 5 minutes late for any kind of social encounter, maybe in this case lunch, if you have 2 minutes where you can get there early and just sort of take a little walk, it sounds silly, but, you know, sometimes you need to have the brain sort of cycle down. And, you know, I don't think it's going to entirely change the dynamic, but it can sometimes pivot you out of an existing one.
And we thank you for the call. Here's a tweet on the critical side. Listener says, who is this forum for? Seems like it's teaching people to talk even when they have nothing to say.
Well, that's a great point. We don't want to encourage mindless or useless talk. Small talk, pro forma, as you say, Michael, can be part of the social contract. But this book is about pushing conversation further where you want to. Sometimes you don't want to, but sometimes you get stuck in a rut. And it's for anybody who wants to make their life more interesting.
Conversation can be enlightening. It can be joyful. Did either of you see the movie My Dinner with Andre? I mean, it's an excellent example of... Well.
Yeah.
Faye writes, I hate how was your weekend when I get to work on Monday. Any question that requires laundry listing foods eaten or what you did this weekend feels tedious to me. Speaking of work, any suggestions for smoothing a job interview? Well, you got a whole section on that.
We do. And again, the opportunity is to find a common language, to find to use the interviewer's language, not in a reductive, repetitive, mirroring way, but to acknowledge what they're saying and create a bond that way.
You know, one problem with how was your weekend, which I think we all have seen be just a killer, is on top of it being a cliche, it's too broad. You know, we talked about speaking with children earlier. One thing Rob and I have found is that if you speak with adults the way you speak with a child, which is to say very specifically in concrete terms, you get a more interesting reply. So instead of how was your weekend, you know, tell me what you did on Sunday night. Now, you're still in the realm of the weekend, which arguably you should avoid, but at least you can get some specific information out of someone, and it will lead to a story, and we're big advocates of storytelling.
Don't you often hear that question, you know, from somebody out of town who's calling you, say, for reasons that have to do maybe with, maybe, you know, work for your publisher or something like that, and they'll say, so how are things in San Francisco? I mean, one of the dumbest questions, you know, how are things in San Francisco? You want to open up a conversation, but at the same time, it's so expansive and ridiculously ludicrous.
It's too broad to answer, right?
How are things in California?
Yeah. Well, you know, just ignore it. We say ignore the question. It's fine. You know, instead just say, would you rather have a fancy lunch with Gandhi or be able to lift a pickup truck over your head? I mean, yeah, you'll get a sort of a strange look, but you're instantly into more interesting territory.
And we'll get into interesting territory, no doubt, with our listeners. Darwin is calling us. What could be more interesting than the name Darwin?
Good morning.
Are you named after Charles Darwin?
Uh, actually, my folks said I was raised or named after a car dealership, believe it or not.
So much for my evolutionary theory. Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning. My question is one of, because I'm Native American, I get this all the time when the conversation usually gets to the fact that I'm a person of color, a brown person. What are you? Or, you know, when I say that I'm Native, then the response usually is about somebody's great-grandmother being Native or, mm-hmm. gee, you know, what tribe and all the things about everything Native. And I kind of, like, want to get beyond that and just have a conversation.
That's interesting, Darwin. I think we tend to get hung up on all sorts of things conversationally, and certainly ethnicity and race is a major preoccupation for a lot of people in this country and elsewhere. But as with any conversational tick, yeah, you just don't want to get stuck there. So
you made a great offer right away about your name, and Michael asked you about your name, which is a great starting point. I'm so curious to hear the story of this car dealership and whatever else surrounds that. It's a left turn, and you can look for those. We call them trigger words, words you can pounce on and take the conversation at a right angle.
Which is really what we're trying to do. We want to empower people to just nudge the conversation away from wherever it's going that you don't want. So you don't even
sure.
need to humor that conversation.
Another thing, though, Darwin reminds me of, Lenny Bruce had a bit called How We Entertain Our, quote, Negro, which was the word that was in use at the time, friends at parties. And the conversation will open, and the guy sounds like a dope, you know, will say, he'll start talking about African-American, famous African-Americans, or he'll say, boy, you know, Jackie Robinson, wasn't he a great ball player? These kinds of things, which in some ways are really patronizing and maybe well-meant, but dumb.
Darwin, have you found either a prompt that you use or good questions you've heard that get past this block for you?
I found a New Yorker cartoon once. A guy sitting in a bar, and he's chatting with someone else, and the guy you know, responds to something like, everybody's grandmother was a Cherokee princess or something like that. You know, but largely I just smile and remember what Miss Manners taught me, which is, you know, be polite because you want to put the other person at ease. But that's why I'm asking you all, because I'm still searching for that, because it just continues in that vein. And like I said, I really want to get beyond it and just have a conversation about many other things, you know. And yes, Darwin is a great one too, and I should remember to use my name more than anything, because then that can take the conversation completely that way, as opposed to being like pigeonholed into one thing.
Well, you say something interesting, Darwin. You say there's all these other conversations you'd like to be having. I think being aware of the conversation we want to have in any given moment can sort of give us a little bit of a direction. And it can, if you know exactly where you want it to go, it's easier to push it there.
And you can lead with that question, Darwin, right? Asking about the other person's name will usually lead them to reciprocate.
You can also ask the other person about his or her ethnicity. I mean, since they're bringing yours up, why not bring theirs up? You know, what's your lineage? And thank you for the call. Here's Michael, who asks, I have an instantaneously available database of unique, real-life, and potentially entertaining personal stories stored in my brain that I have accumulated over 50 years. As someone who pays attention to detail, I find it challenging to tell these stories briefly in a 147-character-fueled world. Any editorial advice?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I think at Twitter, for example, has encouraged brevity, which is a great conversational skill. So use this as a workout for yourself. Take all that experience and wit and intelligence and hone it down. People will appreciate the concision.
Here's a couple of really good questions. Jennifer says, I pick up my daughter at the door of her kindergarten class every day. Same people, same how are yous. I want to be friendly, but I dread it. Suggestions to liven things up.
Yeah. Well, dread is natural, especially for introverts or people on the shyer side of the spectrum. So accept that emotion. It's okay. And turn the conversation to the kid or to, again, an external subject, something in the physical space, something that's going on with the other person, you know, in the moment. This is sort of a Zen lesson, but there are a million things happening in the present, and too often we get stuck in the past or the pattern that we're used to. That's why we ask the same questions.
Here's listener named Griselda, which is a name right out of Chaucer, writes on our Facebook page, when you are asked a rude question, age, weight, are you pregnant, do you speak English, do you answer it or walk away?
Walking away is a pretty big move. It's certainly something that's available to you. You can do it. It might be cool to do every now and then. But in general, you know, I'm sympathetic with people putting their foot in their mouth. So, you know, my inclination is to forgive and escort this person away from this blunder they've made. And
how about
graciously
asking them, is that a foot in your mouth?
Yeah, if you can be gracious and sort of help them recover, you know, I think they will be appreciative in the long run.
Getting some advice from listeners, Bruce writes, instead of asking someone where they're from, I'll ask them, what other languages do you speak? They might be disappointed with a lot of Americans on that one. But Paula writes, best pickup line, you look like my second wife. Yvette writes, I once had a stranger at a cafe start a conversation with me by asking, what do you think of Michael Krasny? The radio was not in the cafe. Charming. And we had a nice long chat. Chris writes, one of my favorite quotes is from Mark Twain, who said, you can learn something from everyone you meet. So when I run into a stranger, get caught in an awkward conversation, I think of that and just try to figure out what I can learn from that person. I've been accused by my husband of being nosy and sounding like I'm interviewing, but don't care. Over the years, I've learned so much. And Mimi asks, I'm wondering if Chris and Rob could comment on ways for an individual to share more about themselves and their own lives with people they are trying to get to know. I'm a therapist and a natural people person, so I have no difficulty getting others to open up. But in dating and new friend situations, I have a hard time thinking of what to share about myself. Any ideas?
Yeah, I think that's a common conundrum for people who are good at drawing others out. And Michael, maybe you even have this in your life where you are good at asking questions of other people. And sometimes they forget to ask you. So I can imagine that for a therapist. I think sometimes you need to sort of stop things and flip the script somehow. I'm actually a fan of silence every now and then. If you just sort of stop talking for about 4 seconds, it's a radical thing to do in a conversation. Dead air will really cause things to sort of...
Can't do it on the radio, though.
No, we're not allowed.
And a little vulnerability goes a long way. I've been practicing this with my daughter. I mean, to tell your kid how you're feeling is a little strange, but it's a good exercise in opening up.
Well, it also teaches your kid that you can open up about
exactly
your feelings.
Yeah.
Another listener writes, in my opinion, most people who talk way too much about themselves and forget that a conversation is a two-way street. What's up with everyone these days? The most important skill in conversation is actually listening. There's a linguist named Abraham Kaplan who talked about duologues. You know, people will wait till you're done, but they really want to talk about themselves. You know, you say, how was your vacation? They really want to talk about their vacation, that sort of thing. So there's too much of that. Another listener says, I think the show is interesting in that perhaps our over-tech society is leading to people losing their basic skills of conversation. In my opinion, the most valuable asset is confidence. I never have a plan, just make the point to say something. Something is always better than nothing. You'll eventually learn what works and what doesn't, but you have to make the effort. I personally always go for a laugh. Nothing beats a laugh.
Yeah, and be willing to fail and try something new that doesn't work. There's no other way to progress.
Yeah, we like misplaced confidence too, because if you go out on a limb and something weird happens, that's fine, and that's a gift to the next person's conversation.
Go to more of your calls. Brandy, thanks for waiting. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm loving this conversation. I love to meet new people and go new places and find out new things, and I think my comment is basically just for people to go, if they're ever feeling anxious about a situation or a conversation or meeting someone, it's most likely they're probably having some of that too, and just know that you're probably all coming from the same place and just take a deep breath and jump in.
If you get that inner panic, sometimes it's good to think of this person in terms of, you know, the old size, well, guys put their pants on, you know, one leg at a time, or, you know, think of something humanizing, you know, maybe even... very humanizing, and it can help, really, I think, in many instances.
Yeah, that connection can change your panic state. I do a lot of work with communication training with the Stand and Deliver group and working in businesses and leaders that have to connect. And the biggest paradox is that actually your authority comes from connection. It doesn't come from broadcasting an idea. It comes from one-on-one conversation.
Let me thank Brandy for the call, and on we go to Oakland. Jazz joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to elaborate on the druthers game you were talking about earlier, the would rather, and how to get the most out of that. as an example, you can really mine a single would rather for what's interesting to the other person. As an example, you could say, would you rather travel for the rest of your life and never be able to settle down, or live in one city forever but not be able to travel? And people will have a really strong opinion about what they would rather do. But what's interesting is start talking to them about, well, under what conditions does that answer flip? And then, like, if they're, I'm a New Yorker, I would never leave Manhattan. Well, what if you ask these what ifs and explore terms of the question and change the question around until they're like, oh, well, I guess I would rather travel for the rest of my life. Or if the answer is to travel, you change the time frame on how long they can stay in one city for any given amount of time and never return and that sort of thing. And you discover, and you're mining it for... You discover a lot about them, but what's really cool as well is they get to discover a lot about themselves too. So in a short period of time, you've taken a stranger and given them the gift of learning something about themselves. It can be a really satisfying way to use that question to get the most out of it.
Yeah,
I think that's a great point. We have a lot of these sort of fun hypothetical situations in this book, but you make a really good point that you need to sort of mine them, and it's not, you don't want to just sort of swing from one to the next casually. You really want to dig deep and sort of excavate what's interesting about the answers and take it from there into the next level or whatever is suggested by the answer. Push it beyond.
I'm just reminded of a writer whom I've admired for many years named John Barth, a novelist who one of his early novels says, you ask somebody, you're studying medicine, why? And they say, because I want to help people. I want to do good. You say, why? Because I think it's important to dedicate myself to humanity. Why? I mean, sometimes just keep hitting that why. I mean, go around chasing your tail and get nowhere with it. But at the same time, it opens up and makes the burden of that person perhaps self-examination really strong.
Yeah, and you're getting at a bigger value. You're learning something about them as a person. I love that.
And a Facebook comment from Anita, like Darwin, I'm often asked, what's your ethnicity? When I respond Mexican, many say, oh, you don't look Mexican, almost as if it were a compliment. So a great dialogue started is my response. What am I supposed to look like? If the person is a good sport, we can get to some very deep, important concepts of race, identity, and stereotypes. Bonna asks, my husband grew up in a family where flowing and open conversation was not the norm. I tell him now, in his ripe old age of 62, to just ask people questions and get them to talk about themselves. He says that's prying. He's not comfortable doing that. How do you differentiate prying versus natural curiosity and friendliness?
I think, again, this is a mindset. And if you approach a conversation with the belief that you're taking something or subtracting from them, your presence changes. If you come into it being curious about learning something or again, giving them a gift, allowing them to explore a new idea, learn something about themselves, then it's not prying at all. It's an act of generosity.
Yeah, I think we can all smell sincerity. And if it has that sort of whiff of genuine curiosity, then it's fine. It's not prying.
You know the old Hollywood axiom? You can't make it until you can really fake sincerity. Talking with Rob Bedecker and Chris Cullen about their book, What to Talk About. And we're going to go next to Benicia and welcome Jessica. Good morning. You're on Forum.
Morning.
Hi.
My question was for advice about couples or people who've been together for a while or have known each other for a while, and different conversation starters that you can ask to, because when you feel like you've asked each other everything.
You mean instead of just sitting there at a breakfast reading a newspaper?
We love this question because part of the book is about familiar relationships. How do you push those out of their comfort zone? We like to imagine this idea of the shadow self or the doppelganger or the parallel life. If you, at a critical point in your life, had taken a left turn instead of a right, where would that alternate you be right now? If you and your husband, you and your partner, wife had not met, where might you have ended up? And start to imagine these hypothetical universes that, again, might tell you something about where you are now or what's at the core of your being.
Another thing we recommend is doing something a little weird, doing something that you don't normally do. Let's say you go out for a drink. Instead of just sitting there talking about your days at the office, what if you forced yourself to talk to that guy over there at the bar for 4 minutes? What if you went to McDonald's instead of Zuni? You know, what if you just do something a little strange just to change the intake? I think that's what it comes down to a lot of is, you know, we get the same old ideas coming in, going out, and you want to change the intake.
You're both big advocates of novelty, of doing things maybe even a little off the wall when it comes to initiating conversation, and I think that's good. So let me thank the caller. Go to some more of your emails. Paul writes, on the elevator, a conversation opener I've thought of but haven't used yet when people are just staring at the floor number display. I've noticed that watching the floor number change doesn't get me to my floor any faster. And here's a listener who asks, great topic. As someone who's generally antisocial and physically uncomfortable in unfamiliar social situations, do you have any tips on easing the pain? Small talk is one of the most excruciating things for me.
You said it earlier, Michael. Everyone feels the same way. Everyone knows that pain. I think step one is remembering that everyone is panicking at some level in a human conversation. That's why we wrote this book. Even your suavest talker is freaking out and having a mini heart attack in their head half the time.
Yeah, you can rip a page out of our book, literally, which has these prompts, and that's fine. You can even read them if the panic escalates enough. It's okay to prepare.
I like this comment from a listener named Scott who writes, Adlai Stevenson, himself a great conversationalist, once wrote that a beauty is someone you notice, a charmer is someone who notices you. Not being much of a beauty myself, I've used this advice all my life and to great effect. The best part is that it works wonders with people from all walks of life, all genders, all cultural backgrounds. Most people do secretly feel unnoticed, and even those who are always noticed are almost always noticed solely for one feature, such as their physical beauty or their height or fame. So being careful and compassionate and creative noticer is the essence of starting a good conversation. The book, again, is What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. And Chris Collin and Rob Battaker, thank you both for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you, our listeners. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this conversation online by going to kqed.org/forum. And clicking on this segment. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks, senior editor Dan Zoll, interns Jack Detch, Marisa Endicott, Maryam Jamil, Hannah Rose Levy, and Audrey Gertz. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.